Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Big show today, folks. But in order to get us started, we need a co-host. So we bring her in. She's intelligent. She's witty. She's funny. And of course, she's pretty easy on the eyes. I'm not going to lie. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen. She also has a brand new book out. We got to talk about that as well. Here she is, Jessica Freeberg. Hi, Jess. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for all the compliments.
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, tell us about the book right off the bat here.
Oh yeah, Monsters of the Northeast is out today. It's crazy. I'm having a book birthday, not just one, but two. It's like I'm having twins, but they're not identical. They're a little different.
So they both came out on the same day?
Yeah, both of them coming out on the same day. The other one is Ghostly Tales of Pennsylvania.
Really?
That was so fun to write. Both of them were super fun. The ghost one was a little extra exciting because we've never been asked to do a Ghostly Tales book by this publisher before. So that was really fun.
Interesting. So we're going to have you on the show here relatively soon. And we'll have both you and your co-author on. We'll have to talk about both.
That would be a blast.
Yeah, most definitely. Wow. Okay. So we'll put links. Well, we've had links up for pre-order, but now we'll have links up for the actual order for the...
Yeah, you can just order.
Order and get it shipped right away to the home. There you go. Yeah. So, all right. Well, now I got to either get from you or your publisher, I got to get like actual books so I can read.
Yes. Yeah. I'll get some sent to you and then I'll sign them for you if you like to have signed copies.
Yes, I do.
But all right, a nice little note in there about how much I love you.
Aw, thank you. See, I get extra perks, folks, that you don't get. See, I love being a host. There you go. Now I'm done fawning. Well, on today's show, folks, we got a huge show in store, and we got a lot to get to, so we're going to get to it today. Boy, you talk about stories upon stories about stories. NASA's got a couple of things happening, including the sonification video that's out there that's hearing the music of the universe. Also, strange noises coming from a Starliner. I think it's all just music and farts in space. That's just me. But
a little gassy.
It's all a little gassy. Space is a little gassy. Also out there today, we've got ghost stories as usual. We've also got a parashare, the second part of a parashare that we started last week. So we've got that to get to. Tiny robots in your brain. That's coming up as well, Jess. We can't forget about our nightmare fuel segment. And there's a new documentary on New York psychics that's out there. We'll talk about that today as well. And we're going to end today's, Parashare. Today's supernatural news and Parashare, telling you about. And normally we don't go into politics today, but we're going to start with politics and with politics today. But it's a skosh politics, just a little bit of politics today, as we're going to tell you about Michigan's first I voted sticker contest.
Oh,
and about the unusual paranormal slant of Michigan's I voted sticker contest.
I'm intrigued. This should be good.
It's going to be interesting. I think you folks will find it very, very interesting. That's at the end of our program today. But first, I told you we're going to start it off with a little bit of politics. We're going to end it with a little bit of politics. Presidential candidate Donald Trump is promising to publish more secret files on UFOs and JFK.
That would be amazing.
It turns out that Trump has touched upon the UFO phenomenon during a recent podcast interview. He was speaking on the Lex Fridman podcast. Recently, Trump seems quite enthusiastic about the subject of UFOs and expressed a willingness to see it that more classified material on the subject was released to the general public should he win the U.S. election in November. Fridman said, "Will you help push the Pentagon to release more footage, which a lot of people claim is available?" He said, "Oh, yeah, sure, I'll do that. I would do that. I'd love to do that. I have to do that," Trump replied, while suggesting that there could be life on other planets. It's certainly not the first time that the 78-year-old has touched upon the topic, having mentioned it even during the final days of this previous term in office back in 2020. "A lot of my friends are very concerned about what the federal government is doing when it comes to UFOs," Fox Business host Lou Dobbs asked him. "Are you going to commit more resources to exploring UFOs and opening the documents to the public?" "Well, I think you're the, probably in this country, you're the UFO expert, so I'm going to be totally guided by the great Lou Dobbs," Trump replied. "And I will tell you that I'll do whatever you ask me to do, including total transparency." Now, that's an interesting statement, total transparency.
I'm going to believe it when I see it.
Right. Because even when he was in office, we got kind of close, but we didn't get total transparency. And even now, with the Arrow meetings and whatnot, you're not getting total transparency. UFOs weren't the only controversial topic mentioned during the recent Lex Fridman interview either. He also brought up the subject of the secretive John F. Kennedy assassination files. "They're also pushing me on Kennedy," he said. "And I did release a lot, but I had people come to me and beg me not to do it. But I'll be doing that very early on. But I would do that," Trump went on to say. Whether Trump actually will publish any of these files in the event that he becomes president again, however, remains unclear. I'll tell you this much. I've seen a couple of different interviews with former President Trump. And to me, it seems like when you ask him about JFK, he backs off quite a bit. I think someone, I don't want to say someone's got to him about it, but I think people have warned him about releasing too much about it because there are still people who are alive from that period.
Yeah, I suppose.
And when it comes to the redaction of those files and trying to unredact those files and release them, there are still some people that could be affected by those files. And that's the only reason why you would not redact those files and release them, is because there are still...
They got to be getting close to when everyone involved is no longer with us. I mean, that was a while ago.
Was a while ago, but there still are... Well, think of it this way. You still do have some veterans of World War II who are still alive. They're barely hanging on, but there still are some. And you're talking, 80 years since certain invasions and certain ends of World War II, right? Between 78 and 80 years. And you're talking, most of the veterans of World War II are up in the 90s and hundreds, right?
Right.
So, 1963, you're talking
40-ish years ago.
Oh, 1963 would be, 60 years?
Yeah. I can't math.
60 years, 61 years.
I was even adding on my fingers.
Yeah. So you're talking, even if someone were in their 20s, 30s, you're talking 90 years, 80 years, 90 years. So there's still some people who are around. I mean, we just lost Kissinger not too long ago. So there's still some statesmen that are around from that time. So, it's still kind of a cautious, let's not quite unredact everything yet. There still might be some people around who, most everybody's gone that could be influential, but not everybody. And then you have to think there's another generation below that that's trying to protect certain things and certain information. And
yeah, we might not ever know.
I say give it one more generation, maybe 20 more years, and most of that information will be available. So,
all right. So we'll still be around. You and I will be in our retirement homes.
Yep.
Playing bingo.
going, we want to know about Kennedy. And the young folks would be like, what's a Kennedy? So, yeah, that'll be what it'll come down to, essentially. Well, speaking of alien visitation, Jess, the belief in alien visitation can be dangerous, according to one philosopher. Scottish philosopher Tony Milligan believes that belief in alien visitors is a widespread societal problem. Tony Milligan went on to say the idea that aliens may have visited the Earth is becoming increasingly popular. Around a fifth of UK citizens believe Earth has been visited by extraterrestrials, and an estimated 7% believe that they've seen a UFO. The figures are even higher in the U.S. and rising. The number of people who believe UFO sightings offer likely proof of alien life increased from 20% in 1996 to 34% in 2022. Some 24% of Americans say they've seen a UFO. This belief is slightly paradoxical, as we have zero evidence that aliens even exist. Keep in mind, he's a skeptic. What's more, given the vast distances between star systems, it seems odd we'd only learn about them from a visit. Evidence for aliens is more likely to come from signals from faraway planets. In a paper accepted for publication in the Proceedings of the International Astronomical Union, and this is coming from Tony himself, he says that I argue that the belief in alien visitors is no longer a quirk, but a widespread societal problem. The belief is now rising to the extent that politicians, at least in the U.S., feel they have to respond. The disclosure of information about claimed unidentified anomalous phenomena, or UAPs rather than UFOs, from the Pentagon has got a lot of bipartisan attention in the country. Much of it plays upon familiar anti-elite tropes that both parties have been ready to use, such as the idea that the military and a secretive cabal of private commercial interests are keeping the deep truth about alien visitation hidden. That truth is believed to involve sightings, abductions, and reverse engineered alien technology. Belief in a cover-up is even higher than belief in alien visitation. In 2019, a Gallup poll found that a staggering 68% of Americans believe that a U.S. government knows more about UFOs than it is telling. This political trend has been decades in the making. Jimmy Carter promised document disclosure during his presidential campaign in 1976, several years after his own reported UFO sighting. Like so many other sightings, the simplest explanation is that he saw Venus. That happens a lot, he went on to say. Hillary Clinton also suggested that she wanted to open Pentagon files as much as I can during her presidential campaign against Donald Trump. As seen in the video, which is below, which you can't see, Trump suggested that he needed to think about whether it was possible to declassify the so-called Roswell documentation relating to the notorious claimed crash of a UFO and the recovery of alien bodies. Former President Bill Clinton claimed to have sent his chief of staff, John Podesta, down to Area 51 just in case any of the rumors about alien technology at the site were true. It is worth noting that Podesta is a longtime enthusiast for all things known to do with UFOs. The most prominent current advocate of document disclosure is Democratic Senate Leader Chuck Schumer. His stripped-back 2023 UAP disclosure bill for revealing some UAP records was co-sponsored by three Republican senators. Pentagon disclosure finally began during the early stages of Joe Biden's term of office, but so far there's been nothing to see. Nothing looks like an encounter. Nothing looks close, this according to this philosopher. Still, the background noise does not go away. Here's where he says there's problems for society. He says, ultimately, encouraging conspiracy theories, which could undermine trust in democratic institutions. There have been humorous calls to storm Area 51, and after the storming of the Capitol in 2021, this now looks like an increasingly dangerous possibility. Too much background noise about UFOs and UAPs could also get in the way of legitimate science communication about the possibility of finding microbial extraterrestrial life. Astrobiology, the science dealing with such matters, has a far less effective publicity machine than ufology. History, a YouTube channel partly owned by Disney, regularly delivers shows about ancient aliens. The show is now in its 20th season, and the channel has 13.8 million subscribers. The NASA Astrobiology Channel has a hard-won 20,000 subscribers. Actual Science finds itself badly outnumbered by Entertainment repackaged as Actual. Alien Visitation narratives have also repeatedly tried to hijack and overwrite the history and mythology of indigenous people. The first steps in this direction go back to Alexander Kazantsev's science fiction tale Explosion, Story of Hypothesis in 1946. It presents the 1908 Tunguska's meteorite impact event as a Nagasaki-like explosion of an alien spacecraft engine. In Kazantsev's tale, a single giant black female survivor has been left stranded, equipped with special healing powers. This led to her adoption as a shaman by the indigenous Evenki people. NASA and the space science community do not support efforts such as the Native Skywatchers initiative set up by the indigenous Ojibwe and Lakota communities to ensure the survival of storytelling about the stars. There's a real and extensive network of indigenous scholarship about these matters. But ufologists promise a far higher profile of indigenous history in the return for the mashing together of genuine indigenous stories about life arriving from the skies with fictional tales about UFOs repackaged as suppressed history. The modern alien visitation narrative has not, after all, emerged out of indigenous communities. Quite the opposite. It emerged in part as a way for conspiracy-minded thinkers in a Europe torn apart by racism to explain how complex urban civilizations in places like South America could have existed prior to European settlement. It kind of goes on a little bit about how history has been convoluted by New Age history along with current history. And I tell you what, I'll take this article. It's got a link to the original article by Tony Milligan. So I'll place this in the description of the program so you can read the entire original article too by Tony Milligan. It's quite interesting, but we don't have enough time to go through all of it. So there you go. Our next story, Jess, has to do with NASA offering a strange explanation for strange noises coming from Starliner. The stricken capsule had been making some peculiar noises while docked at the International Space Station. When astronauts Barry Wilmore and Sunita Williams launched aboard Boeing's Starliner spacecraft of its debut crewed mission back in June, they had expected to remain aboard the ISS for around 8 days before returning to Earth. As things stand now, however, a plethora of technical issues with the vehicle has prevented them from leaving, and it doesn't look as though they will be getting home anytime soon. As if this wasn't bad enough, Wilmore reported during the weekend that he could hear strange noises coming from the Starliner capsule that remains docked at the station. He said, "I don't know what's making it. The sounds described by NASA as a pulsing noise, almost like a sonar ping," went on to leave experts scratching their heads and prompted other astronauts to offer their own thoughts. Former astronaut Chris Hadfield, who famously played guitar during his extensive time aboard the orbital outpost, suggested that the sound was particularly disconcerting. He says, "There are several noises I'd prefer not to hear inside my spaceship, including the one that the Starliner is now making."
No kidding. That's scary.
Yeah. As it turns out, however, the sound is actually nothing to worry about. A pulsing sound from a speaker in Boeing Starliner spacecraft heard by NASA astronaut Butch Wilmore aboard the International Space Station has stopped, according to NASA. The feedback from the speaker was the result of an audio configuration between the space station and Starliner, and it's common to experience noise and feedback. While this particular mystery has been put to bed, it still doesn't help Wilmore and Williams, who remain stranded aboard the space station for the foreseeable future. As things stand, the next opportunity to get home will be on a SpaceX capsule in February of 2025.
Oh my gosh, those poor people.
So much for an 8-day mission. I don't know that I'd want to do an 8-day work trip and end up there until February 2025, unless I really like the people I work with.
Well, you are in space, though. That's pretty magical, but still.
But still, right? I mean,
I don't even like being gone for like 3 days.
Yeah, much less, you know, months on end.
Miss my dogs, miss my kids, miss my husband.
Yeah, right.
Miss my bed.
Right. I mean, that most of all, you having your nice comfy bed. Yeah. Well, NASA also has a sonification video that is like hearing the music of the universe, according to them. This fascinating and profound audio piece is literally a musical manifestation of astronomical data. They're celebrating their 25th anniversary of the Chandra X-ray Observatory this week by publishing a sonification of images recorded by the telescope of Cassiopeia A, which is the remains of an exploded star situated 11,000 light years away. It also happened to be the subject of some of the observatory's first ever images. Sonification is a process that translates astronomical data into sound similar to how digital data are more routinely turned into images, NASA explained. This translation process preserves the science of data from its original digital state, but provides an alternative pathway to experiencing the data. The resulting video, which you can view and listen to, and we'll do that by posting this story in the description of the show, is nothing if not wondrous, offering the almost transcendental experience of listening to part of the cosmos manifested as music. The sonification of Cass A features data from Chandra, as well as NASA's James Webb, Hubble, and retired Spitzer space telescopes, the space agency added. The scan starts at the neutron star at the center of the remnant, marked by a triangle sound, and moves outward. Oh, it's kind of interesting. The music of the universe. I'm trying to see if maybe I can, if I can pull it up real quick here. Let me see if I can,
I love the idea of it. That's so cool.
Yeah. Let me see if I can, let me see. I'll give us a quick second here to see if I can pull it up on the board here and you can hear the actual music of the universe. Do you think it sounds like a farty tuba, or is it more of a... Wouldn't it be funny if it were just a polka?
Yeah, just a polka.
If it were just a polka, I'd be really, really disappointed. You know? I mean, I got enough polkas at weddings when I was a kid.
I'd be like, though, look, man, the universe can play the polka. That's amazing.
The universe can play a polka. I'd be so disappointed. Here we go. Here it is. Cassiopeia sonification. Let's see if...
Kind of sounds trumpety, right?
With a little bit of triangle, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, you know.
It doesn't sound like farts.
It doesn't
or
sound
polka.
Like. Or polka. It just kind of sounds, I don't know. It sounds like a movie soundtrack.
Yeah, someone should use it for a movie soundtrack.
Yeah. Well, we'll still post it in the... description of the show so you can get a better listen to it. And I don't know, blast it on your speakers and piss off your neighbors, I guess. It's the best way of putting it. it's better than metal, I guess, or some rap or whatever, or polka. Yeah,
there's no bad words in it. So
yeah, exactly. It doesn't have swears in it. The universe is
not offensive.
Yeah. Yeah. The universe isn't putting swears in your music, I guess. There you go. It's better than hearing farts in the universe, I guess.
I don't know. I like farts in the universe, though. They're funny.
Yeah, yeah, that would be funny. If it was
farts
like,
are always
if
funny.
If that would have been funnier. I'm just saying. At least God would have had a sense of humor then.
Uranus farted.
Yeah, Uranus farted. Huh? It would have been funnier if it would have been Venus. Just saying. You wouldn't expect a dainty planet like Venus to fart.
But yeah, everyone blames it on Uranus.
That's right. But it's really not. It's Venus.
Not.
Yeah. Let's move on. Russia had microwave weapons linked to the Havana syndrome. This according to the NSA. Declassified NSA documents reveal that Russia was known to be in possession of secretive microwave weaponry. The true nature of Havana syndrome, which is named after a spate of suspected attacks which began in Havana, Cuba, back in 2016, has remained something of a mystery for the better part of a decade. Victims of the phenomena, I have to do that now, otherwise people get upset. Just saying.
It's my favorite.
Is it?
So, I love it.
So if I go, oh no, I can't do that. It's the other deal. Hold on. I have to go to this one right here. Is it this one? Yeah, I have to go. Phenomena. There you go. Okay. There. We've got it out of our system. Victims of the phenomena. There we go. Typically report symptoms such as fatigue, headaches, and nausea, as well as debilitating long-term health issues that have proven difficult to treat. Official investigations have yielded somewhat mixed results, with some implying that the symptoms could be psychosomatic and others favoring an attack by foreign-directed energy weapons. The latter of these two possibilities has seen something of a boost this week, thanks to the highlighting of a declassified 2014 document by the National Security Agency, which seems to suggest that Russia was known to be in possession of a weapon thought to produce identical symptoms. The file mentions two NSA counterintelligence officials who experienced debilitating brain-related injuries as well as dizziness and cognitive issues after exposure to a suspected microwave weapon. One of the two men, Chuck, I believe it is Gabede, has since died, and the other, Mike Beck, now suffers from Parkinson's disease that he blames on the alleged attack in Russia. The NSA document notes that a high-powered microwave weapon that may have to have the ability to weaken, intimidate, or kill an enemy over time and without leaving evidence was known to be in the possession of a hostile country to which Beck had traveled during the 1990s. The intelligence information indicated that this weapon is designed to bathe a target's living quarters in microwaves, causing numerous physical effects, including a damaged nervous system, that according to the document. Despite this, however, the NSA has found no concrete evidence that such a weapon has been used. This echoes the difficulties in linking the use of such a weapon to the more recent cases of Havana syndrome, targeting U.S. officials in Cuba and elsewhere. So could Russian microwave weapons be the key to solving the mystery? They say the search for answers continues. You know, Jess, it was probably a couple of years ago now, we had on a former British intelligence agent, who was very knowledgeable about Havana syndrome.
Yeah.
And it was an intriguing program. I want to have him back on the program. Havana syndrome is such an interesting topic in that you think about how you can be so vulnerable to these microwave emissions and how it can be even wired through your router, because RF energy comes from anywhere. We get it through, we get it through our routers. We get it through, anything can be wired up to transmit too much RF or microwave energy to you. And you can be hit with a high dosage of it from anywhere. And it's an invisible weapon. And you can be hit with
it.
Yeah. I mean, a truck can drive by your place, can park on the side of the road for just a small amount of time, and you could be hit with a microwave energy weapon through your house. So you could just be laying in bed, sitting on your couch, watching TV. You can have this energy weapon aimed at you, and then boom, you can be hit with enough microwave energy to fry your brain for a small amount of time, and they can drive off within minutes.
Yeah, this is worse than nightmare fuel.
Yeah. And
scary.
It can be done, you know, it can be done by a foreign power. It can be done by our own government. It can be done by whoever. It can be done by a corporation. Anybody can have this technology. And it's been available since the 90s. So it's scary stuff. That's for sure. Tell you what, Jess, let's take our break. When we come back, tiny robots in your brain.
Yay.
Not really. We got that coming up. We've also got some ghost stories. We got a parachute story.
Yay.
That's a real yay. That we're continuing from last week. We also will talk about a new movie about psychics out of the New York area. We've got that coming up. Someone claims they found their doppelganger from nearly 200 years ago, and people think that this person's a time traveler. We've got that interesting story coming up. And we're going to end the program. We started it with politics. We're going to end it with politics. Michigan has a brand new I Voted sticker, but it's got a paranormal twist to it. I'll tell you about that at the end of the program. It's all that and much, much more today. Supernatural news and Parashare on a Wednesday, right here with Tim Dettis and Jessica Freeberg. Next on the best in paranormal podcasting, this is Darkness Radio.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Welcome back to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio on a Wednesday. Tim Dennis along with Jessica Freeberg. And Jess, you know, not a bad week so far. You know, we had a beautiful weekend. I got to tell you, I was out at St. Patrick's Catholic Church for the Rib Fest this weekend. Gosh, it was a gorgeous day. We had maybe 68, 70 degrees. Sun was shining. We always have a good day for Rib Fest. Lots of wonderful people out there. We went through 33 racks of ribs for Jelly Bean and Julia's in 40 minutes, Jess.
Wow, that's amazing. It sounds yummy.
Oh my gosh, it was good. And Corey had what he calls the Holy Trinity sauce out there, and they mixed it with a cherry jam.
Ooh.
And all this in the sauce, it was so delicious. It was so good. I got two bones out of it. Because the ribs went so fast. Here's the thing that I'm a little disappointed in. I'll tell you this much. I was a little disappointed in this. No disrespect to St. Patrick's Catholic Church and the taste buds of the judges, but again, they're a little behind in how good the product actually is. Because once again, Jelly Bean and Julius doesn't win a prize over there. I cry foul. I think that there's a little, let's just say a little politics going on over there as far as the judging goes over there. I think
probably so.
Yeah, I think there's something's afoot over there when it comes to let's just say donations as far as contestants go.
We know who the winner is in our book, though.
That's right. You got it right there, Jeff. So I'll just say this. If you're in the Twin Cities area and you're around on the weekends, Friday nights, the smoked prime rib dinner. My God, to die for. Absolutely to die for. I mean, you know, you got your ribs, you got your brisket, you got your wings. They're all wonderful. They're amazing. But that top five meals of all time, that smoked prime rib dinner, is just amazing. Nothing.
Sounds glorious.
It's amazing. It just is amazing. I'm in such a happy place when I talk about that. I can't tell you how many people I talked to about that smoked prime rib dinner, and they were like, when, where, how? And you, do you remember tequila berries up in Coon Rapids? Do you remember the salad? Have you ever had a tequila berry salad?
No, I have not.
Oh my goodness, Jess. Oh, they make a tequila berries coleslaw. It's kind of a sweeter, tangier dressing. And they put it in this coleslaw now, which is just, oh, it's wonderful. You get that and you get a Boston baked potato, which is actually a baked potato. And then it's deep fried. And when you cut it open, it's just this pillowy baked potato. It's perfect. And it's deep fried in a healthy fat. So it's like an avocado fat along with a brisket fat. So it's not these bad oils, but good oils for you. It's amazing. I'm telling you. When you leave there, you don't have a gut ache like you do when, you know, you go to some restaurants, your belly hurts or you feel bloated. So you got this perfect baked potato. It's absolutely wonderful. Okay, so Jelly Bean and Julia's, enough with the promo. Here we go. 25, I believe it's 2500 Coon Rapids Boulevard. Look it up. Jellybeanandjulius.com. There you go. Okay, so beautiful weekend out at Rib Fest. Wonderful weekend. And then, of course, reading Echo Road. I had a beautiful weekend out on the porch with the chipmunks. You couldn't ask for a better weekend, Jesse. Of course, then AI comes in, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Ruins everything.
Yeah. You know why? Because they want me to read about robots in your brain. Robots in your brain, Jess. Robots in your brain. That's right. Swarms of tiny robots could be injected into our bodies to treat bleeds in the brain. What sounds worse?
Well, I mean, if they help me and keep me from dying, stick them in there.
That's cheery.
I'm not ready to go yet.
I'm not either. You're right. Maybe tiny magnetic robot armies are good. But tiny magnetic robot armies could treat bleeds in the brain and open new frontiers in medicine, according to experts. Researchers have created nanoscale robots, each about a 20th in size of a red blood cell, that can be remotely guided as a swarm. That just seems scary to me, though. It is hoped that they could enable precise, low-risk treatments of brain aneurysms, which could cause around 500,000 deaths a year globally. The condition, a blood-filled bulge on brain arteries or on a brain artery that can cause rupture and cause fatal bleeds, can also lead to stroke and disability. The team, co-led by the University of Edinburgh's School of Engineering, carried out lab tests using models of aneurysms and rabbits. Oh, those poor rabbits had to go through an aneurysm?
Oh, that's so sad. I don't like it.
And then they had to take tiny robots to the brain? Poor rabbits. The engineered magnetic nanobots, made up of blood clotting drugs encased in a coating designed to melt at precise temperatures, several hundred billion of the bots were injected into an artery, then remotely guided to the site of the aneurysm using magnets and medical imaging. Once the swarm was in position, the researchers used magnets to cluster them together and beat them to their coating's melting point, releasing the drug at the precise location where it could prevent or stem bleeding in the brain. The team said the study, published in the journal Small, figures or nanobots, I get the irony, points to a future where tiny robots could be remotely controlled to carry out complex tasks inside the human body in a minimally invasive way. This could include targeted drug delivery and even organ repair. Dr. Ki Zhu, who led the study or co-led it, said nanorobots are set to open new frontiers in medicine, potentially allowing us to carry out surgical repairs with fewer risks than conventional treatments and target drugs with pinpoint accuracy in a hard-to-reach part of the body. Nanorobots, Jess.
This is the one time I like AI.
I might have two times for you. This is a more upbeat report. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Do you have an iPhone?
In my hand.
In your hand?
I'm always Googling what you're talking about so I can look at pictures.
Are you ready to upgrade?
I don't know. Is it going to be a robot?
No, it's going to be AI. The new iPhone 16 is set to launch here, possibly this week. And with that iPhone 16, they're talking about Apple AI, which is a feature. All eyes are on the GlowTime event, which is set to start, I believe it is today, as we're recording. Apple's iPhone 16 launch event has a lot riding on it. Apple's expected to release its latest line of iPhones today, as we're recording, that will feature generative AI capabilities as the tech behemoth looks to bolster sales of its iconic device. The company, founded by Steve Jobs, has disclosed little about what it plans to show off during the launch event, titled GlowTime, at its headquarters in the Silicon Valley city of Cupertino. If it's the time of year, however, when Apple typically updates its iPhone lineup, Apple has a lot riding on it, and what would be the iPhone 16, and will hope that customers will be enticed to buy the latest models, attracted by new AI powers. With $39 billion in sales last quarter, the iPhone counts for roughly 60% of Apple's revenue. And chances are, if you're listening to this on a device, it's on an iPhone. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but 80% of our device listens are on iPhone or iPad.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. It remains the main entryway to the company's services, which such as the App Store or Apple TV, which are becoming a growing part of its business as well. Apple is only just coming out of a long sales slump as users increasingly stick with older models longer. That's also because they also update the iOS or operating systems on older devices longer. So you're able to upgrade your operating devices longer on older models. The iPhone 16 will be one of the most significant iPhone introductions, not only because of what's on the outside, but because of what's inside, namely Apple Intelligence, said Forrester principal analyst. I believe this is Deepanjan Chatterjee. Apple Intelligence is a new suite of software features for all devices that was announced in June at the company's annual developers conference, where it also announced a partnership with ChatGPT maker OpenAI. In the short term, these included AI-infused image editing, translation, and small creative touches and messaging, but not more ambitious breakthroughs promised by other AI players such as OpenAI or Google. Apple also said its digital assistant Siri will get an AI upgrade and now will appear as a pulsating light on the edge of the home screen. Interesting. Siri will be a big part of the conversation, creative strategies analyst Carolina Milanese said of Monday's event. Launched more than 12 years ago, Siri had become seen as a dated feature overtaken by a new generation of assistants such as GPT-4o, OpenAI's latest offering. Apple watchers predict Apple will introduce iPhone 16 models with custom chips that can power these AI features, including the Siri upgrade. By adding AI capabilities, Apple is looking to shake that expectation that iPhone launches are just steady improvements in hardware and software, said tech's potential analyst Avi Greengart. Longer term, Apple could dramatically change the iPhone experience with a super-powered Siri working across all the apps, which would be interesting indeed if Siri works across all your apps.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. They're also talking about Pixel power as well, that they could be AI-infused Pixel 9 smartphones, which is something interesting, too, that your actual resolution could go up. But what's interesting is the human eye can only see so much. I don't know if you know that or not, but I was once told that.
Yeah, I believe it. And mine can see less and less every year, so...
It's true.
I can pixel it all I want.
Well, no, that much is very true too. The human eye can only see so much as far as pixels go. When I got my 8K TV, they said, "Well," and this may sound a little sexist, and we'll move on from this in a moment. But the cones in the male eye see a little bit more than the female cones do, and as you get older, you see less and less. So you're actually, a lot of the resolution in an 8K TV is wasted. I didn't know this. 4K is about as much as we can see as far as resolution. And a lot of people who look at my 8K TV and see the 4K resolution, because there's not a lot of 8K programming out there. There's some, but there's not a lot.
Yeah.
But a lot of people who look at the sharp resolution on the 8K. Some of them can't tell the difference between 8K and 4K. And they go,
I can't.
But I can. I can tell the difference in sharpness, especially when I'm watching like the live programming, stuff like that, you know, football.
You're so lucky you have such better eyesight.
I don't, though.
Another reason it'd be great to be a guy. You can pee standing up and you can see more clearly.
I need new glasses.
I mean, I can pee standing up when I sneeze.
Well, yeah. And I wish I could do that. yeah, it saved myself a lot of time. It'll happen, though, and eventually here, as the prostate goes, I'll be able to do that as well.
That's so, right.
Yeah.
This is when we're in the old folks' home playing bingo and peeing our pants when we sneeze.
That's right. And you know what they say? It depends. And that's right. It depends. So, yeah, a lot of that is wasted. And it was someone, believe it or not, an honest TV salesman who told me that 8K is actually a waste of dollars.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's why you don't see a lot of 8K TVs on the market anymore. You can buy them still. They're out there, but they're if you can't see the resolution on an 8K TV, don't bother buying it because it's a waste of your money. So there you go. Little known fact there, Jess. So with that, we'll move on. I tell you what, let's read this this Parashare story we have from our friend here who sent us Craig Rhodes, who sent us a little bit of a detailed Parashare story. He broke it up into different stories for us, and we're going to tackle in bite size here. As a reminder, he sent us last week a couple different stories. He had told us that he delivers baby chicks to farms in an 18-wheeler. We had asked for different experiences, and he says by the time he makes it home, he's usually wiped out from the heat and the long hours. So he had sent us a PDF with a bunch of different experiences, and he was going to, we were going to tackle them experience by experience. Now he had sent us one last week with his first alien experience, his first childhood alien experience, which was in Chesapeake, West Virginia. This one is called the UFO. He says, I'm not sure how long after the alien encounter, but the UFO encounter happened. I know it was before the end of 1974, but after 1972. My friend Mike and I were camping out in a tent in his backyard. Mike lived several houses down from my house, and there was an open lot on the corner next to his house where we played baseball. Straight across the street from his house was another open lot between two houses. As I said earlier, all our houses had fields behind them. Mike's mom had left the back sliding door unlocked for us in case we needed the bathroom. Mike was a bit of a pyromaniac. I can kind of relate. I'm not going to lie. As a kid, I kind of like fire. whether it was a magnifying glass or matches, he loved blowing ant piles up with fireworks and burning things. We were in his tent with a candle burning, you know, stupid things kids do. He started burning small pieces of paper, and eventually the tent filled up with smoke. Okay, I was smart enough not to burn things inside.
In your tent. That's flammable.
Yeah, don't burn stuff in a tent. We escaped the tent for the cool, crisp, fresh air. As we were outside recovering from the smoke, we saw a bright light streak across the sky. It looked to us like it had crashed to Earth in the fields across the street. We were convinced that a meteorite had just crashed to the Earth, and we were going to be the ones who discovered it. We excitedly ran across the street through the open lot and off into the bean fields. As we started to approach the crash site, that's in quotes, of the meteorite, we noticed that it was not a meteorite, but some sort of disc-shaped craft with glowing lights in the midsection and what looked like a large crab claw attached to the craft. There might have been two, but from our angle, we only saw one. Still excited but cautious, we dropped to our knees and started to crawl closer. Ah, the curiosity and stupidity of youth. This is where Mike and I both have possible missing time. We both remember crawling towards the craft, but the next thing we both remember is being on our feet running away. Neither of us remember getting up or turning around. As we were running away, the craft shot up in the air extremely fast. We ran all the way back to his house and went to the side door of his house in the carport, which was locked. We started pounding on the door and calling out for his mom. If you remember, the back sliding door was unlocked, but in our state of excitement, we apparently forgot all about that. Mike's mother came to the door and let us in. We ran in and excitedly were telling her what we had just seen. She rolled her eyes, I guess that's a parent thing, and told us to go to bed. We went back out to his tent, but sleep would not come, as we were too excited and just kept talking about what we had seen. We were not afraid, but genuinely excited. The next morning, we were having breakfast in the kitchen breakfast bar, when over the little radio that his mom always had playing on the counter, the news commentator said something to the effect of, "People are reporting that they saw lights in the sky." One driver reported that it was in the road and had what appeared to be large crab claws. We excitedly told his mom, "That's what we saw." She stood there in silence with a weird look on her face. We were vindicated. Summer of 1974, my mom moved us to Pensacola, Florida, where my next UFO-like experience happened. And you know what? We can save that for next week.
Yay, that is such a cool one. That's like the beginning of a movie I would totally watch.
Yeah, exactly. So again, if you have a parachute experience, you can send it in to us, tim@darknessradio.com, if you type it out. If you want to put it on a voice note, you go to darknessradioshow.com. There's a little blue button on the right-hand side of the website. You just click that blue button, leave us your voice note. You have 2 minutes to do so. If you need more time, click it again, rinse, repeat. You got another 2 minutes. I'll stitch those voice notes together. We'll play it here on the show. Or if you have a fancy studio like we have here, make your own theater of the mind. Sound effects, music, voice, I'll review it. If it's passable, we'll play it here on the show. So you have three ways of doing it. So there you go. And we will hear from Craig next week. And we'll tell you his next adventure in UFO-dom, if that's a word. UFO-dom?
It is. It is today.
It is today. Okay, that's passable. The author in the family says that's passable, at least for today. It won't be next week, but it will be today. Okay, so we'll move on here. We've got some ghost stories and some ghost stories from around the world. And we will start with our first one having to do with a ghost hunter who's horrified after a haunted church wooden door creepily opens by itself. A ghost hunter was terrified after a door swung open while investigating a supposedly haunted church. Paranormal investigator Tony Ferguson was looking around the 900-year-old St. John's Church in Boldrehanth when the heavy wooden door appeared to open of its own accord, sending a chill down his spine. Creeped out, Tony went outside to check he wasn't being pranked, but found that the graveyard was empty of any members of the living. A video captured on his expedition shows the moment Tony was startled by the noise of the door opening as he exclaimed, "What the hell?" He then ventures out into the cemetery calling out, "Hello," and runs around the ancient church to make sure there's no one playing tricks on me, as he said, finding it deserted. He then tells the camera the wind in the church's foyer isn't really that strong, adding, "It's almost like a way of saying get out as I was walking towards the door." 39-year-old Tony, who's a personal trainer by day, is fascinated by the supernatural and has been hunting ghosts for 16 years. While at the church, he also claims to hear rattling from underneath the pews and banging noises from behind him, as well as noises coming from a woman. St. John's dates from the Saxon age and claims to be at least 937 years old on its site, having celebrated its 900th anniversary in 1987. The site, however, has a history of being a place of worship dating back as far as 2000 BCE. According to its local media, the ghosts of a phantom knight thought to be 13th century nobleman Sir William de Vernon and soldiers have been seen marching up the lane before disappearing inside the church. Tony told What's the Jam, "I recently visited alone to see if claims that it was haunted could be substantiated. Ordinarily, I do not investigate churches or graveyards, but if I get requests from several people asking me to check a location to see what is happening, I will visit it to see if I can clarify what's going on. I was heading towards the entrance when the door suddenly opened all by itself. I was shocked as I expected someone to come through the door, and when nobody did, I rushed to see if there was anyone around outside, only to find the grounds empty. Overall, my experience was very bizarre, as there were many things I could not explain." In July, Tony from Lymington also visited the most haunted school in the country in Staunton-on-Wye, Herefordshire. Interesting little story, although here's the problem. I have a slight problem with haunted churches and holy grounds being haunted. Here's a picture of the church right here, Jess.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. And that is, you know, it's supposed to be consecrated ground, right? So if it's consecrated ground, why is it haunted?
Well, I mean, not all hauntings are bad, so, right? Like, I feel like it can be consecrated ground and, like, my grandma could pop in and say hi if I was there or something.
But has your grandma really got that much power that she can move things throughout the church?
If you ever met my grandma. 4'11", 100 yeah. pounds wet.
Yeah.
Watch out.
And she's moving things throughout the church in England, huh?
I don't know. I think it's possible. I think because a lot of energies are just, you know, not negative. So sure, they could be around.
Yeah. Especially that old.
I don't think they could do bad things to you in the church, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, like, I think you're safe in there.
You know, a lot of Hollywood movies would have us believe demons can just march up into a church and start throwing things around. I mean, I find that hard to believe too. I mean, when we get to that point in movies, I kind of roll my eyes, but.
Well, you know what, Tim, a lot of bad things happen in churches.
That's true. You got a point there, my friend. That is true. Although I wouldn't consider that consecrated ground either when you've got scandals and things like that happening there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's soiled or solid ground at that point. So yeah. Yeah. I have another story here inside an eerie lost UK village that's home to the ghost of the great lady who haunts drivers. That just sounds like a driving instructor I had in high school. The tiny village has been the setting of ghostly tales for centuries, from a gray lady who haunts drivers to a highwayman who harasses campers. This just sounds like a village in northern Minnesota, to be honest with you. The quaint village of Oxney, covering just over 300 acres, carries a history that spans thousands of years and is steeped in eerie tales. A piece from Bygone Kent, published in July of 1983, encapsulates the local dread linked to this location. It implies that famed authors Henry James and Edgar Allan Poe would have had difficulty finding a better setting for any of their ghost stories. The article also cites a wagon master exclaiming, "I was always again coming by Oxney. I told him no good would come on it." Really? The site's past remains somewhat veiled in mystery. What we do know is that the parish of Oxney is approximately 1,000 years old and was documented in the Domesday Book. Initially, it was bestowed by or upon Sir William Darvel, a knight, before transitioning into the possession of John Smedley. The church dedicated to St. Nicholas was constructed until the Middle Ages and originally belonged to the premonstrating, I butchered that,
Sounds like something teenage girls have to go through.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. it sounds like it involves a change of life talk is what it sounds like. Yeah. I'm not going to try.
Am I in my sex ed class again? What happened? I went back in time.
Yeah. Premonstratesnian canons of Langdon Abbey.
Close. Perfect. Nailed it.
Yeah, close enough. The Abbey was suppressed. Someone's going to write into me. The Abbey was suppressed during the disillusion, causing the church to fall into ruin. Edward Hasted's history and the topographical survey of Kent notes that by 1800, the site was being utilized as a barn, reports Kent Live. Despite its rundown condition, there are records of burials at the site as recent as 1931. So there you go. And I still can't move my page for some reason. So there were burials as recent as 1931. There you go. Until this thing moves. It's been taken over by ghosts. which will happen from time to time on my iPad. The ghosts will take it over and say, we don't want you to read anymore.
They're mad because you butchered the name.
Yes, they said you should know what Monstratenial whatever is. Right? Elsewhere, campers in the Oxney Woods have reported an unshakable coldness and an inability to light a fire despite perfect weather conditions. Again, northern Minnesota. It's also here where sightings of a masked highwayman have been reported. These encounters may not be too shocking given that in the 18th century, Oxney Bottom, I've had Oxney Bottom a time or two, I'll just tell you that right now, was a notorious hangout for highwaymen. One particularly infamous one was actually hanged on the gibbet here. Yikes. It's thought he's the one haunting the area, occasionally seen peering out from the windows of the old manor house. So there you go. Interesting story. This next story was sent in by a listener of ours, Jess, and this is actually kind of freakish. Okay, so we all have our different fears, right?
Yep.
I have a fear. I have a couple different fears. One is that somebody will accidentally pronounce me dead, put me in a body bag and shove me into like a morgue and slam the door shut on me, you know, into one of those little drawers.
Yeah, that's legit.
Yep, or being buried alive. I forget which movie it is where they bury the person alive and they've got the little bell and that they're ringing the bell constantly and they're scratching on the inside of the coffin. I forget which movie it was. It was recent and it drove me nuts. Like I had to like shut my eyes, white knuckle the edge of my chair. Cause it was that much gripping fear in my body. And when I saw it, it freaked me out. It wasn't one of the Insidious movies. I'm trying to remember which it was, but it drove me nuts. This story has to do with a hospital telling a woman's family that she checked out when she was actually dead. So it was the opposite of that.
Oh.
Yeah. And of course, what do they show in the picture? One of those morgues.
Oh, no. This story is your worst nightmare.
It is, isn't it?
That turned around.
Yeah. The family of Jesse Peterson, a 31-year-old woman from California, has filed a lawsuit against Mercy San Juan Hospital in Sacramento, alleging negligence and mishandling of a corpse. Peterson, who had type 1 diabetes, was admitted to the hospital on April 6th of 2023 due to a diabetic episode. She died 2 days later from a cardiac arrest while suffering from diabetic ketoacidosis, according to her death certificate. However, the hospital allegedly told Peterson's family that she had left against medical advice. How do you not know somebody dies and that they didn't leave the hospital?
That's so bad.
That's horrible. The family spent a year searching for Peterson before they were informed by the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office in April of 2024 that she'd been found dead at the hospital.
That long?
Okay.
That is insane.
They spent a year looking for this woman. She was at the hospital the entire time.
Man, that is a lawsuit.
Yeah. Now, according to the lawsuit, the hospital had moved Peterson's body to an offsite storage facility without notifying her family. Huh? So they knew, they moved her offsite, and they didn't say, oh, by the way, we found your loved one. We're moving her offsite. Huh?
This is banana. This is a new fear for us now, Tim. Now we have to worry about this too.
Yeah. The family's attorney, Mark Greenberg, stated that the hospital was required by California law to issue a death certificate within 15 hours and to contact the next of kin, neither of which they did. The lawsuit describes the hospital's conduct as malicious and outrageous and accuses the facility of negligence, the negligent handling of a corpse, and negligent infliction of emotional distress. The family is seeking more than $5 million in damages, as well as a jury trial. In response to the allegations, Dignity Health, which operates Mercy San Juan, said in a statement, "We extend our deepest sympathies to the family during this difficult time." Really? You didn't cause that difficult time?
Yeah, that's not enough.
No. They also said, "We're unable to comment on pending litigation." Is it because you're guilty? You big assholes. That's all I got to say about that.
That's so bad.
Oh, all right. Moving on. There's a new A24 documentary exploring the world of New York psychics out there. It's called Look Into My Eyes, and it follows several psychic mediums as they provide intimate readings for their clients. Interesting. A24's new documentary, Look Into My Eyes, follows the activities of several psychics in New York, and it doesn't try to push one view or the other, but instead offers a more balanced overall impression, providing the viewers with the opportunity to make up their own minds. The documentary, which debuted at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year, is directed by Lana Wilson, who describes it as an invitation to think about the role of art and performance in our lives. Look Into My Eyes sets its gaze upon a group of New York City psychics as they conduct deeply intimate readings for their clients, revealing a kaleidoscope of connection, healing, and the eternal need to have witnesses to better see ourselves. Early impressions of the documentary have been positive, with reviewers praising its sensitive approach to the subject, in particular regarding those grieving lost loved ones. Look Into My Eyes will get a limited release this week, and will be more widely available in the near future. Interesting stuff, that's for sure. I don't know, what do you think, Jess? A movie about psychics.
I'd watch it.
Yeah? I think it's interesting that it's trying to stay neutral in at least trying to present somewhat of a skeptical view. I think that's...
Yeah, it's more journalistic that way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'll check it out. Look Into My Eyes, it's what it's called. So, this story talks about a doppelganger from nearly 200 years ago and how one woman says she found her doppelganger, yet people are convinced that she's a time traveler because of it. Lindsay Bolis was left stunned after discovering a picture of her lookalike from 200 years ago while searching her ancestry online. This is where people get into trouble, the whole ancestry thing. They say, look, I found a picture of my ancestor from 200 years ago. Look at this.
And then, looks just like me.
Right. Well, and you would think so, right? Because that's your lineage. You would think you would tend to look like your ancestors, right? People have been convinced that she traveled through time as a result. Come on.
Oh.
This is where you get people who get a little.
We want to believe so much.
Yeah, right. Now, a woman has gone viral on TikTok after discovering a picture of her doppelganger, which is her own great-great-great-great-grandmother. Which, believe it or not, folks, sometimes there are some strong genes out there that travel down the genetic pathways, right? Lindsay Bolis said she was researching her ancestry online when she stumbled upon a photo of a woman with the same face as her. The 28-year-old said she had an uncanny resemblance to Mary Beckwith, who was her fourth great-grandmother on her father's side and lived from 1805 to 1873. Comparing pictures of herself to Mary, Lindsay amassed more than 4.6 million views of the clip and left users convinced that she's a time traveler. "I thought the resemblance was shocking," Lindsay said. She told What's the Jam, "I found the picture on Ancestry when I was looking for my family members on my paternal side. I know her name is Mary Beckwith, and I was able to find out she was born in New York and died in Wisconsin. She had one son. Her husband, Abraham Bullis, was a surgeon in the Civil War. But that's all I really know about her. I feel like we have a special connection with her." Lindsay from Wisconsin shared the clip of herself next to the picture of Mary online, showing off the incredible resemblance. "Found a pic of my fourth great-grandma, and I have her face," she penned in the caption. It prompted one TikTok user to respond, "Girl, that's you. Welcome back." Another agreed, "You are her." A third added, "Oh my God, you look exactly like her. It's uncanny." While a fourth alleged, "I don't buy it. You are a time traveler." Elsewhere, another user theorized, "They say you reincarnate into the same families." Another person concurred, "This screams reincarnation. Like you honestly can't deny. It's scary. You are her." "Identical," one user agreed. And someone else said, "Her soul needed to come back, and here you are." Now, I'm going to show Jess this picture. I'm going to try to blow this up a little bit. You tell me, Jess, did she come back into this lifetime?
Wow, they do look exactly the same. That's pretty wild. I don't know that I think that she's reincarnated, but she definitely, the genetics came through.
Genetics are very strong. They look very similar. I don't know.
Genetics are science, and science is tangible. And I mean, it's not that I don't believe in reincarnation, though, because there's too much evidence of it.
Sure. Right. But, you know, I mean, they're very similar.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. And again, if you're listening to this on the podcast, you can watch the video at darknessradioshow.com. You can see the picture. I may share it too. I may share it in the description of this program, but it's an interesting picture, isn't it?
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and I, as far as I go, I'm a lot of relatives have stopped me and said, "You look exactly like your grandfather, Chester." And like, I've been stopped at funerals and they go, "Hey, Chet," and they grab me by the shoulder and go, "Oh, I'm sorry." And don't realize that I'm not him.
Right.
You know, but genetics are strong. But again, bald hair, glasses. And I have that same build. I have the same barrel chest and everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but we both existed in the same timeline at one time. So, and there's only two generations between us. So there you go. This next story has to do with a bizarre video reportedly showing a goblin that attacked a farm worker. What do you think about goblins before we get into this, Jess?
I love them. I love me a goblin.
Do you think they exist in the modern world?
I think that there are interdimensional beings that exist in another plane that sometimes come through. I do kind of think sometimes energies present themselves to us in a way that makes sense to our mind. And so, does that make sense?
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So if you believe in goblins, it might present itself as a goblin.
Okay. Well, this extremely strange story is out of Argentina this week, and it pertains to an alleged attack by a goblin-like creature. In what surely is a contender for bizarre story of the year, a young farm worker whose name has been withheld for privacy reasons had reportedly been out in the field somewhere in Argentina on August 31st when he was attacked by a mysterious assailant who fell from above out of nowhere. The entity, which initially took humanoid form before apparently turning invisible, reportedly dragged him violently from his tractor for several meters, leaving him bruised and unconscious. Later, when he came around, he told one of his fellow workers what had happened and showed off a number of nasty wounds that he claimed to have sustained during the attack. It wasn't long before the Argentinian media had picked up on the story, with news reports referring to the mystery creature as a goblin, elf, or ukumar, which is the name for an ape-like creature of local legend. The incident has also become associated with a piece of video footage that has been doing the rounds on social media, which shows a small goblin-like creature running around next to a vehicle. It remains unclear if the video is supposed to show the same creature that attacked the farm worker. Whatever the case, the story seems to have gained quite a lot of attention in Argentina, with some people claiming that the whole thing is the real deal and others dismissing it as a hoax. There is a video attached to this story, so I tell you what, I will post this as well in the description of the show.
Awesome.
We got two more stories, and I'll make them quick. The first one is a bizarre story about an ingredient found in Doritos that turns a mouse's skin transparent, and it may have medical applications. This is just bizarre and weird. You've heard of yellow number 5 before. If you look at your Doritos, you've seen yellow number 5. Here's what it does to mice, Jess, and it is bizarre. Scientists at Stanford University were recently able to make a mouse's skin go transparent using a common food dye, something that the study's author told Fox News Digital could have exciting benefits for humans once additional research is conducted. The paper titled Achieving Optical Transparency in Live Animals While Absorbing Molecules was published in the journal Science on September 5th. In it, the researchers used a solution of red tartrazine, which is a food dye known as FD&C yellow 5, on the abdomen, scalp, and hind limb of a sedated mouse. Now, when they did that, the dye turned the mouse's skin red, which then made the skin appear transparent. And then the mouse's organs were visible to the naked eye. Right?
Yuck.
Right. The researchers believe this is the first non-invasive approach to achieving invisibility of a mouse's living internal organs. The effects were not permanent. Keep in mind, the mouse's skin then returned to normal once the dye was washed off. The results of the study surprised even the researchers. The most surprising part of the study, that we usually expect dye molecules to make things less transparent, said Dr. Gu Song Hong, who's an assistant professor of materials science and engineering at Stanford and senior author on the paper. For example, if you mix blue pen ink in water, the more ink you add, the less light can pass through the water, right? Yet when tartrazine was dissolved in skin or muscle, normally opaque materials, the clearer the material became, but only in the red part of the light spectrum. So here's a picture, Jess, of what happened.
It was so weird.
So you could see inside the mouse.
I mean, cool, but like, don't put that in my food.
Right. And it's common in Doritos. So that's the odd thing today in supernatural news. Be careful what you put in your body.
No more Doritos.
Right? Here's the final story. We started with politics, we end with politics. If you're in Michigan, people are howling over the winners of Michigan's first I Voted sticker contest. Here's why. Though 9 designs won the privilege of being printed, one really stood out from the pack. Michiganders can't wait to cast their ballots after seeing the results of the state's very first I Voted sticker contest. On Wednesday, the Great Lakes State unveiled the 9 designs that topped the statewide competition, which brought in an impressive 480 entries. 57,000 people voted for their favorite sticker online. One winner really stood out from the pack. An illustration by middle schooler Jane Hines of Grosse Pointe had people howling after Bridge, Michigan reporter Jonathan Oosting shared it on X, the site formerly known as Twitter. People were begging for a chance to get their hands on a copy of the design, which features a preposterously shredded werewolf ripping his shirt off in front of a marker-drawn American flag and striped versions of the words, I voted.
Yes, I love it.
Right? One man said, I'm in Ohio, but I once lived and voted in Michigan. May I have one of these pretty, please? Immaculate Stars and Stripes Werewolf, 10-pack abs, bulging veins, wrote an ex-user with an anthropomorphic fox as their profile photo. All right, I'm in. Another simply declared, I demand this to be nationwide, while many others sent their compliments to Jane the artist. In a statement shared on Wednesday, Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson said she was floored by the response the contest received. I was overwhelmed by the enthusiasm and creativity of the people of our great state, she told Bridge, Michigan. Now let's use the same energy in casting a vote this November. Joining Jane Hynes's patriotic werewolf are eight other equally charming designs, including an elk with rainbow sunglasses and a baseball cap, a childlike scrawl that says, I voted yay, and a beautiful illustration of Michigan's state fish, the brook trout. All nine stickers are available for Michigan voters when Election Day rolls around on November 5th. Now, Jess, here is the picture of the Michigan werewolf.
That's fantastic. And ripping that shirt off. Yep. Absolutely six-pack abs.
That's right. And you can get that if you're in Michigan on Election Day. And that is how we end Supernatural News today. So there you go. See, who says you can't cover politics on a Supernatural News?
I feel like you did a nice job with politics today.
See?
You're not offensive.
Nah, not at all.
Sharing the news.
Yeah, go get yourself a werewolf on Election Day. See, we did that with our stickers here in Minnesota. Not that I won't go vote. I will go vote, but just
I'm only voting if they give me a werewolf sticker.
That's right. So if we could get Michigan to ship us some of those werewolf stickers, I think we'd have a better turnout.
Or put the rock on the ballot. Those are my requirements.
That's right. Or put the rock on the ballot. One or the other. That's right. That's right. All right. So Jess, you've got two new books that are out now for people.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Their birthday is today.
That's
right. Yesterday.
Well, it would have been yesterday, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So tell people
they're
all
still
about
babies.
Them. That's right. They're still babies. They're preemies. Not preemies. They're newborns.
They're full term. They've been baking for like a year.
That's right. So tell people about the books and where they can get them.
Yeah. Monsters of the Midwest and Ghostly Tales of Pennsylvania. You can find them on Amazon or Barnes and Noble, wherever you prefer to buy your books. And if you live in those areas, you can find them in bookstores, probably in gift shops. But
right on.
You prefer to shop in a store.
Or there's a link in the description of this program so you can get those books as well. Also, Jess, you've got a discount still for those trips. That's up.
Yes, I have the event at the Palmer House in November, and Darkness 20 will still get you 20% off of your tickets.
There you go. So follow those links that are in the description of this program so you can get the books and you can come see us out at the Palmer House. So there you go. There you go. All right, folks, I promised you, I teased you yesterday, and I'm going to tell you today who's on the big program tomorrow, and that would be Richard Estep, good friend of ours. He has a brand new book out called In Search of Demons. It's on Llewellyn Press. Boy, is this a star-studded book, I'll tell you. He's got people like Jason Hawes in it, Michelle Belanger, and he takes a skeptical side of demons. And literally, the book is about being in search of demons. Do they exist? Are we overblowing the phenomenon of demons? And demons in our society, and what role do they play? So tomorrow, we're going to be talking to Richard about his one-year journey into writing this book and what he found in this book, which is very interesting. He went to different paranormal authorities and different paranormal, I hate to use the word experts, but that's what we'll use, and got their perspective on demons and whether they believe they exist. So, interesting book. It's a very interesting book.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that's tomorrow on the big show, Richard Estep, In Search of Demons, right here on Darkness Radio. So that'll do it for today for Supernatural News and Parashare. I want to thank you guys for joining us. Check out darknessradioshow.com. There's new stuff in the store. And again, check out Jess's books and pick up her books, sign up for the trips, and be right back here tomorrow for Richard Estep In Search of Demons on the best in paranormal podcasting. You've been listening and watching Darkness Radio.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.